Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 4th of November. Next week in Milwaukee, actor Stephen Lang will be presenting Beyond Glory. It's the stories of eight Medal of Honor veterans from World War II to Korea and Vietnam. The play is adapted from Larry Smith's book, and Lang has performed this in a celebrated run on Broadway, in Chicago's Goodman Theater, on military bases all over the world, and in a command performance on the floor of Congress with Medal of Honor recipient Senator Daniel Inouye in attendance. During October and November, he is taking Beyond Glory coast to coast. He performs in Milwaukee at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts next Monday, November 11, Veterans Day. He has won all kinds of awards for this performance, and he is a celebrated star of film and stage. You may remember him from Avatar or the HBO documentary Love, Marilyn, or from the New York stage in A Few Good Men or Death of a Salesman or Hamlet or numerous other movies and plays. A portion of the proceeds of the Milwaukee show will be donated to the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative, and we'll talk with people from that initiative at the very end of our show. As always, you're welcome to join the conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Stephen, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you next week. You have said, Stephen, that this play is very personal. It's a very important project in your life, and you take immense pride in and credit much of your personal success to this particular play, and I was wondering about that. Why is that?
Why do I credit my success
to this
play? Well,
yes.
Quite simply, at the time that I conceived and wrote and began performing Beyond Glory, I had been looking for some new avenue to express myself. I felt that good acting roles were coming to me, but not with the frequency that one would want, but any actor feels that way, I suppose. But quite specifically, when I was about to open this in New York, they were running ads in the New York Times, and it was a photograph of me in the play looking very military and very, very sort of fit and strack. And as it happened, Jim Cameron saw the ad and remembered an audition I had done for him years ago and thought, maybe Lang would be really good in this, and that's how Avatar came about.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Aside from the personal satisfaction that I've derived from doing this show, it had a very, a material payoff
right.
for me that I never, ever anticipated.
Right. I saw your TED Talk at Swarthmore, and you were talking about when you first did this show, there were only maybe a handful of people in the audience. Nobody came to the show, and then you got a rave review in the Washington Post, and it changed everything.
Yes, we were doing it. We decided to do a production very late in the day of 2003, and all the theaters were booked in Washington. But we found a theater at a place called the theater at the Women's Memorial, at the Memorial for Women in Military Service at Arlington, literally at the gates of Arlington National Cemetery. So it struck me as a very sort of poetically right place to do the show. Unfortunately, no one in Washington even knew there was a theater there. And in any case, they don't come across the river to see things. So we started doing there, and many was the night I played it for two or three people. It was an extraordinary, I wouldn't trade the experience for anything, because it was one of the great lessons in humility that I've had in my life. Hmm. And then we were fortunate that Peter Marks, the senior critic for the Post, came, saw it, loved it. And we, what had originally been intended for maybe a 5 or 6 week run, we ran for 10 weeks, and we could have run all summer, but didn't. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Post critic said it's as stirring as Taps at Dusk, and Taps at Dusk is pretty darn stirring, isn't it?
As starkly moving, yes. And it was I don't usually quote reviews, but that one has always stayed with me, because it seemed to me that he had discerned and distill the absolute intention of the performance.
Now, is it true that you created this show during a time of your own personal angst about what was going on in Iraq, that whether you didn't support what was going on there, but supporting the troops and what that meant?
Well, you know, that's always struck me as a difficult statement to reconcile. I'm against the war, but I support the troops. I understand it intellectually. Mm-hmm. It's just a very difficult statement to put into effect, you know. And at the time, I felt, and I still feel, that the nation was so deeply divided, so fractured along so many lines, ideological, political, socioeconomic, religious. And I thought it was important to do something that on a very fundamental level, very basic level, addressed some of the things that we share, some of the concepts that bind us together, not only as Americans, but as human beings. You know, concepts of loyalty, of duty, of fortitude, of courage, and finally of humility. And that's what binds these eight very, very diverse men together, it seems to me. So that's it just seemed worth doing, you know. And I can't say that that's what I thought at the outset. You know, you begin to do something, and along the way you kind of wonder, why am I doing exactly what I'm doing? And those are the thoughts that occurred to me along the way.
It seems to me that Americans, and perhaps other countries do as well, have a difficult time with this issue of patriotism, that it can be easy to wave the flag, to stop the show, to get the audience to applaud, to be somewhat sappy about patriotism. And I know you go way beyond that, but why do we make it so sentimental when it's really anything but?
Well, I think it's an easy thing to do. And you know what? On the 4th of July and on Veterans Day, I'll wave a flag as enthusiastically as anyone. But it's always been, I've been very adamant about the point that there are no flags in Beyond Glory. There is certainly no flag waving. There is nothing jingo about this show in any respect. I wanted to talk about, if it's patriotism, on a much, much, I think, a deeper level than mere the sentiment of flag waving, which certainly has its place. But this is not an America Hoorah show. This is an examination of the phenomena of war and what and why certain people, why individuals do what they do, which goes beyond any flag, it seems to me.
I'm really interested in all the stories, but I heard you talk about Senator Daniel Inouye's story of going to war. He was with his father and what his father said to him. And then you're performing this. I would have been scared as could be. You know, here I am doing this guy and I'm doing the show and he's in the audience. And it's on the floor of Congress, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
I talk about maybe being a little nervous. He's one of the people who's in one of the eight. Can you tell us his story?
Well, Daniel Inouye was part of the 442nd, which was the Nisei trips, all second-generation Japanese-American. There were spaces for 4,500 men in that combat team, and over 12,000 passed through because of the high rate of injury and death in combat during World War II. They were considered, they were not indispensable to the cause. They threw them in wherever they felt like it. And in 1945, on April 20th, on a high ridge called Colle Musatello near San Lorenzo, Italy, Inouye pulled the pin on a grenade at the same time that an enemy soldier fired a rifle grenade, and that grenade tore his arm off. It was dangling, and he had already pulled the pin on his grenade, and he had to pry the grenade free from his own hand, which had frozen around the grenade, and as he did so, the lever snapped open, and he tossed the grenade into the face of the enemy soldier, and then, when it found its target, and then, with his arm dangling and eventually came off, picked up his Tommy gun with his left hand and charged, and he took out, as he puts it, Well, he doesn't remember doing this, by the way, but this was all one of the criteria of the Medal of Honor, is it has to be observed, of course. There have to be multiple accounts of it, and they have to all coincide. He charged, and he took out several gun emplacements, and then was wounded again in the leg. So now he'd been shot in the abdomen previously.
Goodness.
Then was shot, had his arm taken off, and now was shot in the legs. And they tried to evacuate him, and he said, nope. And he called his first sergeant over, and he began to place his men, because, as he said, it's only logical that after a successful attack, there will be a counterattack, and I want these men ready to defend this ridge. Mm. That's what he did. He does not have a memory of doing it.
Mm. And his final words from his father, you said this somewhere about it, which is so moving. If you must give your life, son, do so with honor. His yes. father, a man of few words, and Senator Inouye's response, I said, yes, sir. Goodbye.
Yes, that's the final moments of the show, and it's very fulfilling to get there for several reasons. Number one, the beauty of what he says, the simplicity mm-hmm. of what he says, but also I'm done for the evening.
I bet it did. This takes a lot out of you, doesn't it? I mean, I've only seen bits and pieces of the performance from the TED Talk, yeah. but this is not. This is from the guts and the heart, and it must take every ounce of energy you have.
It's 80 minutes straight through, no intermission. Part of, as I said, you examine why you're doing something, and part of the reason I did this was to find out if I could do it, because. Mm. I was not at all sure I could. I mean, I've got a lot of nerve. I play black guys, Japanese-American guys, you know. It takes everything I've got. By the same token, I put all my experience, all the years that I've had working in the theater as an actor, into this show. And at some level, this really is an expression of what I believe acting is all about. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about playing African Americans on stage. I guess I hadn't realized that there were no Medal of Honor winners African American World War II until 1997.
That's correct.
Why?
There was, for one thing, at that point, certainly back in the 40s when the Medals of Honor were being presented, and on into the 50s. There was institutionalized racism within the services. The Army was not integrated until 48, but to integrate it in name is not, of course, to integrate it in fact. But one can draw one's own conclusions as to why no medals were presented, but it was a grievous oversight, no question. And it was rectified. They began researching at the Army, you know, the services, to their credit, began to rectify what they felt was a grievous oversight on their part. And so in 1997, President Clinton awarded 7 Medals of Honor to African Americans in a ceremony at the White House. And what's particularly poignant about it is that only one could be present, because the other 6 were, of course, awarded posthumously. Mm. You know, one of the things that stands out about the Medal of Honor, it is that it is awarded posthumously fully 70% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you had a chance to perform, I think, before at least one of the African Americans who received the Medal of Honor, didn't you?
In 2010, I went down and I performed for the Medal of Honor Society, which is composed solely of living Medal
of Honor goodness.
Recipients.
Yeah.
Certainly the most rarefied fraternity in the nation. And Clarence Sasser, who I portray in the show, was there. At the time, I didn't do the full show, the full 80 minutes. I can do excerpts of it, you know, as well, which I did for them. 80 minutes is a long time for those fellows to sit sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the right place for it. So although Clarence Sasser has seen me perform, he has not seen me perform himself. And this very night, I'm in Tyler, Texas right now, Clarence Sasser will be in the audience, and I will be performing a Clarence Sasser for Clarence Sasser. So today I'm a little bit nervous.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
But and all 8, they were all alive when you wrote this based on the book, and they all gave permission for you to portray them on stage, right?
Yes, they did. Everyone signed off on it. Absolutely. They were, You know, it was the way was paved by Larry Smith, the journalist who wrote the book Beyond Glory, which is, you know, interviews with 25 or 26 living Medal of Honor recipients. And Larry did such a fine job of it and really earned their trust that they were happy and willing to sign off on this. So I've done it with their blessing. And you know, it's gone well.
Yeah, I would say so. It's gone very well. Stephen Lang is our guest this most of the hour, and his play will be performed in Milwaukee significantly on Veterans Day. He's doing a tour. He's in Texas right now, and he's touring. It's been on Broadway. It's been at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. He's performed it on military bases all over the world, and he's doing during October and now November, taking Beyond Glory coast to coast. Milwaukee, Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. It's next Monday, November 11, which seems to me to be an absolutely perfect way to mark Veterans Day. And a portion of the proceeds of the show in Milwaukee will be donated to the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative. And we will talk with the director of that organization at the end of this interview. I mean, it's absolutely shameful that one out of four homeless people in Milwaukee are veterans. Isn't that incredible? I mean, it's just hard to take that in. It's not right. Stephen was in Avatar, and he's been in all kinds of movies and plays. He's a very distinguished actor. He also has he considers himself to be an ambassador for Gettysburg. No sooner had I read that about him than I thought, we got to talk to Stephen a little bit about Gettysburg, because the 150th anniversary of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address is also coming up later this month. If you'd like to join our conversation, please feel free to do so. And maybe the questions that we're asking is, how should we mark Veterans Day? What story, maybe you've had the rare privilege of seeing Stephen perform, but many of you are listening are veterans, and we can address the issue of war and the themes, honor, humility, and sacrifice, the themes of war. What about dissent? Stephen also talks about dissent is not unpatriotic. It makes for a good society. And what he's doing with this play and how it's being received by audiences literally all over the world. It may be the kind of show you just want to listen to, but I certainly would like to invite you to join us. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave messages there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For you to join our conversation, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I guess an obvious question, Stephen, would be, because you've taken Medal of Honor winners from different wars, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, World War II, we consider to be heroes. Korea, we forget about. In Vietnam, we'd prefer not to talk about it at all. Did you find that influenced what Medal of Honor winners would say about their experience in war in any substantial way, or was there a common theme of the experience of war?
Well, I think that there are differences, for sure. I find that the World War II vets, who I portray, John Finn at Pearl Harbor, and and Vernon Baker in Italy, and Daniel Inouye, they are they're untroubled, as it were. Mm. Whereas I find that the Vietnam pieces are they're more ambiguous. Mm-hmm. There's not more violence, not more conflict, but there is, in a certain sense, more darkness, I think, more psychological darkness in some of the memories. Now, I have to add that that may be a product of my own interpretation, mm-hmm. because, you know, this is necessarily an impressionistic piece. This is a painting, not a photograph. Beyond Glory. I'm not trying to duplicate these men. I'm trying to be truthful about these men and be authentic as I can. But it's necessarily filtered through my own consciousness. And you know, I was not alive for World War II. I grew up on a diet of World War II films in which as a rule, the war was kind of this glorious thing. And we do, the further that things recede into the past, I think the more nostalgic we become about
yes.
them, and the more idealized they become, although I think it's very, very difficult for the Vietnam War to become idealized.
Yeah.
But yes, there is. And in terms of Korea, I think this is what we try to point out in the show is a stubborn kind of pride in the fact that they were there. You know, at least for Hector Cafferata, one of the recipients I portray, the Korean War came as something of a blessing because he had always wanted to be a Marine, and his father had been over in World War II, but the war was over by the time he came of age. So he sort of viewed the Korean conflict as a reprieve, you know, a chance to serve.
Let's take a call from Frank in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Frank.
Hello. I was calling for one to say hi, and thank you for having this program. My wife and I are both veterans and have had served, but fortunately not in a wartime situation. But at the same time, as veterans, we're actually opposed to war at this point in our lives and hope that we find better ways in the future to take care of our conflicts with others. But the main thing I want to say is that at some level, not very many people still volunteer for the military. You know, they talk about being 1-3%. And I'm hoping that maybe someday our country would consider having some type of service that's required by young people, whether it be military service, although not everyone's suited to that, but maybe even some type of community service so that everyone can get that feeling of honor, pride, and dignity about living in the United States. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Frank, for your call. Stephen, what do you think of that idea?
I totally get on board with the notion of service. You know, I came of age during the Vietnam War. I was in the first draft lottery. My number never came up.
Oh.
I never served. It was not a war that I was going to jump into. And yet sometime, years later, I began to feel no regrets for my life because I've had a wonderful life. But I felt that I was unfulfilled in some area, and it had to do with being of service. It had to do with, you know, a very tangible expression of what it means for me to live in this country. And having been all over the world, I count my lucky stars that I live in this country. And so here I'm too old to fight, but what do I know how to do? I know how to act.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way, for my own self, there is a service component to Beyond Glory, but I totally believe in the idea of a national service where young people or even older people should have to do something to serve the nation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Frank, for your call. Feel free to join us at 800-486-8655. I know, Stephen, that you have done the performances of Beyond Glory at military bases all over the world. Every time I do a show on the military or I speak with World War II vets or Vietnam vets or whatever, I feel like I'm missing a big part of what they went through because I really don't understand what it's like to be in war. I don't understand that band of brothers that, you know, trying to stay alive. All of it just seems to be living right at the, you know, between living and dying. And it's just, and I'm wondering how you get that sense as an actor. You must have that because you're so immersed in their characters. And if military audiences understand what you're portraying much better than civilian audiences.
Well, one of the reasons I was motivated to do this was the absolute unvarnished truthfulness of what the men were saying in the book. They transmitted their experiences in no uncertain terms. And so I come as close as I can to experiencing that and hopefully transmitting that experience through their words. And it's interesting. Yes, you're absolutely correct that active service and vets have an have a very special understanding of what this show. You see them many times nodding their heads in recognition at certain things. But I love performing it for civilian audiences, for, you know, legit theater audiences, as it were, mm-hmm. who find it interesting and fascinating and hopefully enthralling, not only on a level of pure theater, but also because I think that it offers insight into the military mind and into the phenomena of what it is to be engaged in mm-hmm. war. So for people for whom the military is not part of their daily thought process, I think it has an awful lot to offer. That's been my experience, for sure.
So bring us inside the mind of a Vietnam Medal of Honor winner.
Inside the mind of a Vietnam Medal of Honor recipient, well, Nick Bacon, who passed away about 2 years ago, received the medal for basically going ballistic, you know, in a field where his battalion was pinned down, and he carried a lot of wounded men off repeatedly, went back into the line of fire to do so, and was wounded doing so. And for Nick, he always said, I never had any. It was a game. The whole, I approached it as a game. I came to terms with the fact that there was a pretty good chance I was not going to make it out of there because you're infantry. On the other hand, there is a good chance you'll make it out of there wounded. He says, you know, I think you worry the first 2 months and the last 2 months. And that big in between, you really don't think about it too much. So for him, at least, he approached it as if it were a game of survival. And the whole idea is to get better at it than the other guy. And if you do, you have a chance of walking away. His main piece of advice, there's a section in the play where he just gives combat advice. And the real, the most compelling piece of advice is, you got to know where to walk.
Right.
Just don't walk in the wrong place, because if you do, somebody's going to get blown to hell.
Catherine is calling us from Oshkosh. Hi, Catherine.
I listen to this program all the time as I travel back and forth from Oshkosh to Appleton, and I'm so glad that I came upon this one. As a young person, I had always wanted to volunteer for the Peace Corps, and that never happened for me. And so actually just a few months ago, the AmeriCorps came upon my path, and I am very proud to be serving as an AmeriCorps volunteer through the Wisconsin Health Corps on our own home soil. And I agree with the previous caller. I think it was he had said that, you know, I am very proud to be able to do this, to be able to serve my country in a way. And I really think that it's something that really should be required. I mean, there's no other feeling than being able to serve your country. I work with a diverse group of young people, mixed ages, actually, and that's all I wanted to say.
Oh, thank you very much for the call, Catherine. Yeah, there is a lot to be said for service, a lot to be said. I don't want the hour to go by just because I have a profound attachment to Abraham Lincoln and to Gettysburg, and went to Gettysburg for the first time with a group of listeners, Stephen, a couple of years ago, and stood on the ground where Abraham Lincoln gave that address, and that anniversary is coming up. And lo and behold, after reading about you and what you're doing with the Beyond Glory, I also realized that you're kind of an ambassador for Gettysburg as well, aren't you?
Well, I've been attached to Gettysburg for many years. I think it started when I was filming the film Gettysburg, based on Michael Schaar's classic Killer Angels, in which I portrayed General George Pickett. Developed a great fondness for it, and through the years have returned many, many times to participate in events there marking certain days. This summer, on the 1st of July, the 150th anniversary of the battle itself, I was there, and we did a really beautifully received performance.
Mm.
Yeah, I go there whenever I can. 2 years ago, I was very honored to deliver the remarks at the November 19th dedication day ceremony, which they have annually, at which they're, of course, the Gettysburg Address is read, and then remarks are made by a speaker. Whether it's Steven Spielberg or President Obama and or me, whatever I'm doing there. And then, but the most moving part of the ceremony to me is they swear in new citizens there as well.
Oh, really?
At the very ground where Lincoln delivered the address. Yeah, yeah. It's an extraordinary place. It just vibrates. It vibrates, resonates with meaning. And,
doesn't it?
And emotion.
I know.
And it doesn't matter what time of year you go there. You don't have to go there, you know, during the summer months when the battle happened. In a way, it's even more, gets to your soul even more if you go in the autumn or in the winter when there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it stayed with me forever. I think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. The performance, you're going to be here on Veterans Day. I think it's great you'll be in Milwaukee on Veterans Day.
We're thrilled to be there on Veterans Day. I mean, I can't think of a place I'd rather be, and we're really looking forward to it. And I have no doubt that at the end of the performance, we will be certainly acknowledging the vets who are in the audience. And we always look forward to being in the lobby afterwards to shake hands and take pictures and you know, whatever the audience requires, we're there for.
And you must be incredible. I know that a portion of the proceeds from the play will go to the organization we're going to speak with next, and it's the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative. Shame on us, then. One out of four, and I'm sure this is true nationally, homeless people in Milwaukee are veterans.
Mm. Yeah, it's a national tragedy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Well, Stephen, thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you in Milwaukee, and all the best to you, sir.
Thank you very, very much for having me on, and we look forward to seeing you all in Milwaukee as well.
Stephen Lang, actor and playwright. He is starring in Beyond Glory. It's a one-man show depicting the stories of eight different Medal of Honor recipients. It is taken from the book, and he created the show in 2003 and has performed it all over the world. And he had a long run on Broadway. He had a run in Chicago at the Goodman Theater. He's been on military bases. And he decided that he would, for October and November of this year, bring it to locales all over the United States. It's been described by a Washington Post reviewer who turned the play around. He used to have no audiences. And after this review, it's as stirring as Taps at Dusk. He started getting audiences. And then he got a grant. How's this working together? The Department of Defense and the National Endowment for the Arts. And that allowed him to continue doing this play all over the country. We're going to be talking the next part of our program with the executive director of the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative. Evidently, HBO is doing kind of a documentary on Stephen's travels all over the country, and so they will be following him to Milwaukee and to the location of the Homeless Veterans Initiative as part of his Milwaukee appearance. Why is it that one out of four homeless people in Milwaukee is a vet? Why? What are the problems that veterans are encountering, and how are we helping? We'll talk about that in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Spurko is a registered nurse who served 10 years in the Navy and worked in human resources as HR manager at Home Health Agency and a food program. She has a long history of advocating for veterans, served on veterans advisory boards for several U.S. senators and Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle. She founded Veterans and Military Families for Progress, which is a political advocacy group, and she is now the executive director of the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative since 2008, helping more than 1,000 veterans and their families in a variety of ways. As we said, the performance by Stephen Lang next Monday at the Marcus Center, a portion of the proceeds from that show, Beyond Glory, will go to this organization. And Tracy, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Thank you,
Kathleen, for asking me.
Yeah,
By the way, I love your show, and thank you so much for covering this issue.
Yeah, our pleasure. I wish you didn't have to exist, but our pleasure to bring attention to it. You know, these figures, they make you just stop in your tracks. How in the world, one out of four people in this city, and it's probably true all over the country, homeless persons is a veteran. How could that be?
You know, I've struggled in talking to all the so-called experts, you know, whether it's the chicken or the egg, and it's a little bit of both, meaning the nature of what you do in the military changes you and can make you different.
Oh.
And for many of us, I don't know that we ever really fit totally back into society again. And I think that's the struggle. And when you wrap into it things like drug, alcohol, mental health issues, PTSD wrapped in there, it leads to problems. And, you know, that's our mission. We say we don't leave our wounded behind. Many times in the military we say that as a country, but we do leave our wounded behind. And that's why this organization was started 5 years ago by two Vietnam veterans who felt that they needed to put their money where their mouth was and that we needed to do something. And they literally went out and started doing outreach under the bridges in Milwaukee, you know, abandoned warehouses, things like that, in home, you know, in the shelters. We continue that mission today, and we've added a couple other missions as part of that to help what we see as the need for the veterans in our community. And I have to say, not just the community of Milwaukee, but the state of Wisconsin has risen to the occasion. When they have become, when they've had the knowledge that there is this problem, they give us what we need to try to help. And that's the thing. There's never going to be a quick, easy fix. And that's what I think we continually come back to as a society. People say, well, give them an apartment, get them a job. There's usually a lot more complicated factors in there that just getting them a job and an apartment, most of them have nothing, which is one of our other missions, is providing them with household goods and furnishings because they usually have a backpack or two, and that's it. They don't have transportation. They don't have money. Even if they got a job, it's a low-end job, many times without benefits. So we deliver to them at no cost everything they would need to make that apartment a home. And we then, our third piece is that we do an emergency food pantry. And that is because this whole population, there's also another 5,500 estimated at risk in the Milwaukee area. Hmm. So those are the people that one paycheck, one delay, one problem, they're so close to the edge that in any given month, by the end of that month, they could be homeless.
Mm-hmm. It sounds from what you're saying, Tracy, this not being able to fit back in, I get that. I can understand that. I don't know what it is society can do after many of these people have experienced such horrors to fit back in. Can you? Are there services that are not being provided? Or if you've experienced war, is it just impossible, which you hate to believe, to ever be able to fit back into a life where you're not at war?
I think there's a price that we pay as a society, and we need to recognize that.
Mm.
But I do want to say that the Veterans Administration does have a number of programs. They are doing, and we work closely with them. We fill a niche that's not there. It's the VA who is, and the Center for Veterans Issues in the Milwaukee area that are actively daily working on these issues too. And, you know, in collaboration with them is how we came to find our mission. What couldn't they do? Where did they see veterans being left?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone's trying to find the fix, and we're working on it, and it's getting, in some cases, it's getting better. But it's one of those things that even as we're talking right now, there could be somebody somewhere today that burned their last bridge, that they're being told, get out, don't come back. And, you know, so there's always going to be, it seems, sadly, a new person that's going to need help. And it's going to be different areas. That's why the Center for Veterans Issues exists, and that's why the VA is there for the particular needs. We're very lucky in the Milwaukee area. I find the challenge, especially with the newer Iraq, Afghanistan, is that getting them to hear us. One of the things about being, I'm a sailor, a soldier, sailor, a Marine, is there's an independence, and it's a weakness if you can't get it done.
I see.
What you're told is get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, maybe you're not functioning well, but the last thing, the absolute last thing you want to do in the whole world is ask for help. And that's one of the reasons why some institutions, other organizations like Dry Hooch and ourselves, you know, and we work a lot with Dry Hooch, work so well because we're veteran-based.
Right.
And there's a message and there's a way we can talk to one another. It's almost like the dog whistle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can hear each other maybe where others we can't. And when I was a nurse at the VA, you know, I was in that job, and the people that I helped, they didn't always hear me, but when I'd let them know I was a veteran, I had a different relationship with them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I understand that. When you say that people give when there's a call, they give all the time when is needed all year, or they give mostly on Veterans Day and Memorial Day? Do they give all year, I guess, is the question.
Well, it's like an ocean. We have an ebb and a flow. And I'm constantly having to ask. And, you know, there are certain items that we're always low on, things like dressers, bed frames, blankets. Right now we're very low on blankets because we use those not only for the veterans when they move into their homes, but we use them out in the field.
Mm.
There are homeless people who do remain outside even in the winter, and that's part of our mission to make sure that they're clean, dry, and warm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've had over 100 veterans that we've helped in that way, that when they're ready to come in or they need some kind of help, that they're actually willing to talk to us because we've built up a trust relationship. We also have, we need pillows. I mean, actually today I looked. We have three deliveries tomorrow for three veterans that we're putting into their homes. We had a family on Saturday. That's another thing, is we're seeing more families and
really?
More women. We have, we do about 10 moves a week, to as many as 14, and which is a tremendous amount. And last week we had three families, and this week we have three families, and which is a greater drain on our resources. The one family last week had seven. It was a mother, father, and their five kids.
Mm.
And there's various situations that happen to them, and it's an honor that I was able to help them on this journey to rebuild their lives.
Mm.
And to see parents, especially the parents, when you have the children involved,
right.
The pain when they can't provide for their children, and when we come, and we give this freely. This is to say thank you.
Yeah.
We're just helping you. And that's why the donations that we get from the money, because obviously running a program like this, we have a truck. I have three formerly homeless veterans that do the delivering and things for us. And it's a very expensive process. And then we have the need constantly. We're open 5 days a week. And we're delivering 5 days a week and picking up to make sure that we meet the needs out there, whether it's food in our food pantry, whether it's warm coats, warm boots, socks, pillows, blankets,
yes.
And things like the couches and the bed frames to make sure that people are off the floor. And not only off the floor, but they really can have a home. One gentleman said to me, we brought him a kitchen table. Kitchen tables are like gold,
oh.
The smaller ones.
Yeah.
And we brought it, and I thought of it like a kitchen table. You eat at it. And he teared up, and he said his daughter had been through an awful situation, and he had gotten out of the hospital to take care of her. She had gone into foster care for a little bit. And he teared up, and he said, "You've given me a place to be a family with my daughter where we can eat dinner across from each other."
Oh.
And so, you know, when I say furniture, I think sometimes people are sort of like, oh, you know, it's just furniture. It's not. It's life-changing when you don't have those items and when you come to realize what they mean for your relationships, for your use of your space, for your use of your kitchen.
Right.
Not having a can opener, going to a food pantry and getting that much-needed food and coming home and calling us because you can't even open those cans. And you are so poor that you don't have enough money to go buy a can opener.
Yeah. Tracy, what's the best way before we take a couple phone calls for all of the many needs? And you've outlined some of those. I know there are people who are going to want to get in touch with you right away and say, hey, we want to help. How should they do that?
They should call 763-5596, or they can drop off Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 1 p.m., 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. At 7222 West Fond du Lac Avenue.
7222 West Fond du Lac Avenue, and it's 763, that's 414, of course, 763-5596.
Correct.
All right, let's take a couple phone calls for you, starting with Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Let's stop beating around the bush. The number one issue with these homeless vets is mental health. Barbara Raddatz wrote a book, and Kathleen, you interviewed her after she put that book out. A group of Marines stuck in Iraq in an alley had to shoot women and children to save themselves. Now, we are asking these men and women to do unspeakable things in the name of our freedom. And when they get back here, of course, they cannot readjust to society, either because of what they have done or they have seen fellow soldiers doing in the name of freedom. Stop beating around the bush. They don't need a sandwich necessarily or a blanket. What they need is real mental health. Number one, when they get back, that should be the first thing off the boat when they get home. And we should not have a single homeless vet. Shame on all of us. Just shame on us.
Yeah, but they sometimes need a blanket, too, and some food in addition to a sandwich.
I can say, I remember when I got out of the service, and I've talked to numerous vets about this, and we laugh. You know, they put you in a room, and the young lady who works with me who went to Kuwait and Afghanistan, she said this. They put you in a room, and they ask you, are you okay? Do you have any mental health issues?
Mm.
But if you say something, you're not going home,
right?
And you're going to have to be evaluated. And when you're at the end of your enlistment, there's only one thing you want to do, and that's to go home, get out, be done with it.
Of course.
And that's one of the things, and that's why I say the information, some of the things that I even think I take for granted, I know where the VA is, and that's why some of our people we have people that are trained to walk people through. They literally will drive them, hold their hand, sit there with them to get them started on the process.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to build up that trust. And then the second part of that, I think, is also that what we learned with the Vietnam vets. When they first came back, they didn't know they needed help. And that's what gets back to my independence. I can do this.
Right.
You know, I'm not a failure. I don't want to be weak. And I think until it gets painful enough that they realize this isn't working.
Well, Ray is right. There is a great deal of shame on all of us for having this be such a serious problem. We need to address this when people get home and realize there may be issues down the way for many vets. It's deplorable that this would happen.
Well, and again, it is the price we pay
for
when we go to war.
Yeah.
And if we're willing to go to war, we need to pay that price and be there in all the ways that we need to take care of. You know, all the way back to the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln wrote a very moving piece that was how we started the Soldier's Home in Milwaukee. And what he was describing was PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've known about it for a long time. We just haven't always done what we needed to do.
Thank you, Ray, very much for your call. Tracy, thank you so much for what you do. Give us again. It's 414-763-5596. You need blankets. You need pillows. You need kitchen tables, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you need some more kitchen tables, and they need money, of course, as well. Thanks, Tracy, for being with us. And a reminder that a portion of the proceeds from the play that Stephen will be doing on Monday on Veterans Day will go to this very organization, the Milwaukee Homeless Veterans Initiative. Thanks to KP Whaley and Robin Cherry for producing this program. Thanks for your calls, everybody. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you tomorrow at 1:00.